My name is Zibin Xu, Dr. Z, Architect Evangelist at Microsoft. With me today is Kevin Hazard. He is here today to present at Northern Virginia Code Camp. We are going to talk about dynamic languages today. But before we get started, Kevin, can you introduce yourself to our audience first?
Sure. My name is Kevin Hazard. I'm a software architect. I live in Richmond, Virginia. And I'm here today to talk about dynamic languages. It's kind of the love of my life.
A lot of people are talking about dynamic languages at Microsoft PDC in October. You know, we heard Microsoft is going to introduce a new language, C Sharp 4.0, and we heard, dynamic language runtime. So what are dynamic languages? What is a runtime? What are the differences?
Well, dynamic languages are a family of languages that include those like Python, Ruby, JavaScript, and those languages tend to be sort of late-bound languages. They wait until late in the process to do things. The dynamic language runtime is a framework. I call it the language of languages. And the dynamic language runtime is really about defining the boundaries between languages and what's required for those languages to interoperate with each other. So it has this moniker, dynamic language runtime, implying that it has something to do strictly with dynamic languages, but it really is the language of languages. And Microsoft has done a fantastic job defining the boundary between languages and what's required for interopt. It's interesting that if we go back in history, we look at the component object model, solving problems with things like iDispatch for dispatching calls between components, component-oriented programming. It was a really tough problem, and we're still doing that today. We're still focusing on dispatch mechanisms. Well, it turns out in C-sharp 4 and the .NET Framework 4.0, the centerpiece of what we're getting in .NET 4.0 is a dynamic dispatch mechanism between languages.
You mentioned a few dynamic languages like Python, Ruby, and all that, including Microsoft implementations. But why can't you use C-sharp, VB.NET, or even Python, Ruby, to write those applications?
One of the toughest questions that I get when I talk to people about the DLR is, they say, I could write that whole thing in C-sharp. Why do I need to use Ruby or Python? Or they might say, I can write the whole thing in Ruby or Python. Why do I need C-sharp? And the question is not whether or not we should do things monolithically. It's really about sort of the mindset that organizations, you know, the organizational mind that's brought to the game, and the tool sets that developers and organizations have a lot of investment in. So if you have C-sharp as your basic language, pardon the pun, or BASIC as your basic language, then you have a lot invested there. And if you want to experiment with Ruby or Python or manage JavaScript, the barriers are there today to make that very tough. It's a very hard thing to do. The DLR is about reducing or eliminating those barriers so that you can integrate them in ways that make sense for those languages. Parts of the application that need to be dynamic can be dynamic, and the parts that need static typing and early bound control because of build processes or team interop, whatever the case may be, they can have that. They can have that too.
Alluding to my early comment of PDC 2008, and C-sharp 4.0 is becoming a dynamic language. Can you comment on that?
We never thought we'd see that happen, did we? But C-sharp is definitely becoming a dynamic language in the next release. Many people have seen the demos from PDC. And it's a very exciting time. The really interesting thing about what's happening is not so much that C-sharp is becoming dynamic, but that the DLR is becoming a sort of a first-class citizen in the runtime. And that's really the hallmark of the 4.0 release in my mind. Having dynamic features in C-sharp will be great because I'll be able to do things that I couldn't do before with C-sharp, things that I might have deferred to using Python or Ruby or JavaScript to get things done. So the kinds of interop that will be required will be different in those circumstances. But the really great thing is when I have a set of languages sort of at the top and a set of object models at the bottom, languages like Python, Ruby, C-sharp, VB, and others, and then at the bottom having a dispatch mechanism into plain old .NET objects, dispatch mechanism into Ruby, Python, COM objects, and then having that really intelligent dispatching mechanism that I talked about, that dynamic dispatcher that knows how to bind the two up and make them work efficiently. That's really the heart of the investment that Microsoft's making now. The fact that C-sharp's becoming dynamic is almost a side effect of that. And it's a good thing, but because it'll be able to play in that space. But it's a side effect of really the overall pattern of the framework having this dynamic layer on it now.
Who do you think will really benefit from using dynamic languages, such as C-sharp 4.0?
Well, I think there are sort of two scenarios in my mind that where there'll be big benefits. One is working in the language of your choice today, whatever that is. As that, if that language participates in that family of languages I've talked about that sit on top of this dynamic dispatching mechanism, then it automatically gets to bind to COM objects and plain old .NET objects and Ruby objects and Python objects. It gets that for free by sitting in that layer, operating in that layer. The other thing is being able to experience new languages that you haven't been able to experience before. So if you're predominantly a C-sharp developer and you want to experiment with Ruby, you don't have to go to your boss and say, the millions and millions of dollars of investment we've made in our C-sharp training and infrastructure we're going to throw away and rewrite something monolithically in Ruby. You can experiment. You can say, there's a portion of my application that would really benefit from some dynamic behaviors. And I have a library that's available today in Ruby to do that. Let me bind that in and invoke it from C-sharp or actually run that code as one of the family of languages on top of the dynamic dispatch mechanism. And you'll have the best of both worlds. So I think both players, you know, the people that want to stay with their language and the people that want to experiment with new languages have a mechanism to do that now.
Do you have something to show us, Kevin?
In fact, I do, for the two classes of users we talked about that could benefit from dynamic languages. I have two separate demos to look at. Okay, so in this first demo, we'll address that first class of user that we talked about that could benefit from dynamic languages. We'll start by looking at the Iron Python console, IPI as we call it. And here, I'm just going to show you what a Python developer is accustomed to being able to treat things like property bags. In fact, every class in Python is a property bag. So if we say something like class bag and say we pass, we choose not to provide an implementation, we can say something like b equals bag and then just start adding properties to it. I can add the property name, for example. So Python is a duck typing language. We say duck typing because the concept is in this object model, if it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it must be a duck. So in this case, we're just adding quacking and walking to the object. Well, we're really adding properties. So I can say the name is Kevin, and I can add an age and wish that it was 27. And then I can do things like, say, print hello b.name. And it works because the object b, which is a bag, has the property name. And I can write methods and do things like that. So flipping over to another environment, let's take a look now at, this is Visual Studio 2010, and it's running in a virtual machine. This is the CTP that we got from PDC recently. And you can see here that in the C-sharp code, I have a new keyword, dynamic. The dynamic keyword is really a static type that allows you to create objects that have dynamic behaviors. Essentially what it is an object that C-sharp doesn't enforce compile time behaviors on, or at least doesn't put those constraints on it. So, for example, in this object, I can add a name and an age. In the same way that I can extend the objects in Python, I can do that now in C-sharp. So the interesting thing here is that if we go to do some work on the bag, we really only need things in this write bag method that behave, that have name and age properties on them. As long as they have a name property or an age property, they work. So if we look at the write bag implementation, we can see that we're just referring to the age and name properties on a dynamic bag, right? Some dynamic object. Now, the really key thing here is that anything that's presented that has those properties will work. So it really is duck typing. The other really nice thing that we can do is we can add behaviors. So I can create a script, basically a delegate, or a lambda expression here, and then attach a whole new method to that bag. Right? I can say the bag has a new say hello method, and then I can invoke that method. So this is really interesting because it leads to some architectural patterns that are interesting and that dynamic language developers have been able to do for quite some time, and they're accustomed to being able to work that way. Okay, for the second demo, which really speaks to that second class of users that can benefit from dynamic languages, I've prepared something written in Visual Studio 2008. It's important to understand that these things that we're talking about can be done today. You don't have to wait until C# 4 and the .NET Framework 4 appear to do a lot of these things. So this application was written in C# 3 today on Visual Studio 2008 and Python. I could have picked VB and Ruby if I wanted to, but the point is that I have a static language and a dynamic language working together. In this scenario, I can add products to a shopping cart, and as I add different products in different categories, I get different discounting rules that apply. So as I add, say, 4 separate gadget products, I can see that my discount percentage goes to 10%. But the Python code that drives this in this other window is live. So I could say, you know what, that should really be, say, 9% and commit those changes. But that's 9% for 4 products in the cart of the gadget type. Well, you know what, maybe you need 5 products to qualify for that now. So I'm being really stingy today. And, of course, they back off to a 7% discount. We can see that change immediately. So this Python code runs every time I change the cart objects. Now, the important thing to understand here is that the cart and this whole application is written in C#. But I can inject these rules directly into the C# application to get the behaviors I want. You can see here this is a very simple program that gets counts, calculates discounts, and then applies them based on some very simple algorithms. We won't go into the details, but you can see here Python is a very simple language for this kind of thing. Maybe simple enough that you can give to end users to write this kind of code for business rules. So for the second demo, if you want to see some of the details, the integration points sort of look like this. Inside the shopping cart object, you can see this is C# code. This is Visual Studio 2008. I have the shopping cart object is able to set a rule called the apply discounts rule. And then whenever the rule body changes, we execute the apply discounts method. And the apply discounts method just says execute the rule. And inside the engine, this is a little wrapper class that I wrote that essentially takes the rule object and then creates a script engine. This is from the DLR. It creates it from the configuration based on the content type. In this case, it's the Python script that we saw earlier. We create a scope. We inject some symbols into the scope, specifically the cart object that's needed. And then we turn the source code into something we can execute and then execute it. And that's really it. Those are the 4 steps. So if you want to integrate Python or Ruby or some dynamic language with a static language like C# or VB, you follow those 4 steps and you're up and running today.
These are really interesting demos, Kevin. One question we get asked a lot is that it's great to have the support for dynamic languages in C# 4.0 or .NET 4.0. Mm-hmm. But people are a little concerned that if introducing that DLR sitting on top of CLR, if that's going to introduce some potential performance hit. So what's your view on that?
Well, performance is one of those things that architects spend a lot of time focusing on the wrong things because they have this sense of purity about portions of the application that have really no bearing on the actual performance of the application. When you characterize how long a database query takes because of the network latencies, things like data binding with reflection have no bearing at all. they're not even the same order of magnitude. So the reality is that when you look at performance, there's sort of 2 things that we have to think about. One is, with respect to the DLR, in the DLR that's coming in this 4.0 framework, we have something called call site caching, which is really, which says once you've bound up something that's dynamic, don't bind it again. Reuse it. And you can actually get incredible performance out of dynamic languages by using call site caching. So I think a lot of the concerns that people have will sort of melt away as soon as they see the performance that they get through call site caching. Today, if you use, from the second demo, you saw that you can do a lot of this stuff today on the existing DLR hosting specification. There are a lot of things that you can do to eke out performance. So, for example, reusing script engines and script scopes, those things that we looked at. If you reuse those types, or you prepare application domains for hosting things, you can sort of charge them with the objects that you need and reuse them. So architecturally, there are a lot of things that you can do to eke performance out of dynamic languages by just simply thinking smartly through the problem.
As architects and developers start using dynamic languages in their applications, what are the potential issues or concerns they should be aware of?
Security is one of those things that has a lot of meanings. Of course, we think privacy. We think authentication, authorization, access control, data integrity, non-repudiation, trust, whole bunch of issues there. With respect to security in the DLR integration, I think the thing that comes to top of mind for me is if I have code that might be sourced by business analysts running up against my real-time objects, do I really have to worry about what those analysts, what their code might do in that space? And the answer is absolutely yes. So the DLR hosting specification that's available today, the Dynamic Language Runtime hosting specification, deals with several scenarios around isolating dynamic code. And the key thing is, what I would recommend, and from an architectural perspective, is think about being able to marshal your objects across to some kind of secure application domain where you can execute the code and then test to see if there are side effects that you don't really prefer. And at least keep those out of your sort of runnable objects, the things that are runnable in your .NET, your plain old .NET object space. So there's lots of examples. Again, if you refer to the Dynamic Language Runtime hosting specification and look at some of the application domain-oriented segregation models that are in there, I think they'll get a lot richer over time. But for now, and certainly being able to use those models will get easier. But for now, it is a tremendous concern. Microsoft knows it. Anybody that's working in this space knows it. And architecturally, just make sure you don't give don't empower those business analysts to the extent that you give them the store and they can trash the place, because they certainly could. And you have to think about segregating their work off. Look at that documentation closely.
Seeing how easily now we can use dynamic languages in applications, do you see this may actually lead to a potential change of the way of how we develop and architect solutions?
I think so. I think what's interesting is that if you talk to dynamic language developers, people that have been working in languages like Ruby for a long time, they think of design patterns in many cases differently than the way static developers or static language developers think of them. For example, things like strategy pattern. If you think about it, dynamic languages are all about being able to design new strategies and to do them late in the process. And one of the things that I think we'll see, even with C# developers that start to take on some of these dynamic habits, dynamic language programming habits, is that they'll begin to think about method injection as a means of introducing strategies, strategies for problem solving. And we'll also see, how visitor and observer patterns are sort of rethought when dynamic language features are available. Because certainly if you talk to Ruby programmers and Python programmers, they've been doing it a little differently for quite some time because they have a tool set that allows them to do that. So from an integration standpoint, certainly architectural changes, architects will have and developers will have whole new capabilities that they didn't have before. But I think sort of in their mind's eye, how they sort of carve out or carve up problems They'll do it a little differently when they have the ability to inject methods, inject properties, and inject fields, or just to change behaviors at runtime. When you have that power in your hands, you do things a little differently. And I expect to see that people come around to that over time. Some people will abuse it. Some people will use it really elegantly. But either way, the tools will be there, and we'll be on the front lines with it.
Thank you so much for your time, Kevin. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.